This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, hey, everyone. Welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a, what is it, Wednesday night or a Thursday afternoon, depending on where you reside on this beautiful blue marble, such as it still is. And, wow, what a day it's been over here. I've had contractors running all over the house here all day long. And the reason being is I've mentioned this road that that we live on is just insane with traffic, and there are 6,000 more apartments going up just on the other side of the bridge from us. And I guess as part of the deal to get approval for all these units that are going to cause all this extra traffic, those of us that live on the main thoroughfare are being given free acoustical treatments to the household. So we're getting double glazed windows and all this other kind of stuff, big fat front door. And so they came in and did about half the work today. At some point here, probably during the middle of my program, the last of the guys that are here working on the front of the house probably sneak through to unplug their power. So, you know, these are the things we deal with today. But got a bunch of stuff today. I'm sorry about yesterday. Seems as though we had a bit of a connection problem. I don't think it was me, and I don't think it was Bob. I think it had something to do more with the infrastructure, and there you go. There you have it. That's what happened. So where to begin? Well, I think we'll begin with today's track of the day. And in preparation for tomorrow's interview with Travis Meeks of Days of the New, I figured I'd play another Days of the New track. And I figured, since I don't play a whole lot off of this record, because the first album, although really good, I think doesn't quite hold a candle to the second two. However, this track that I'm about to play, called Face of the Earth, of course rings with me. It's a little song about Mother Earth. I've played this before as a track of the day, back when this show was on in the early hours of the morning, when Joe and I used to start the broadcast day. And so I figured we'd go back to the early days of the New before we have our interview tomorrow, which I think is going to be really, really special. I've been getting some contact from people on Travis's MySpace pages, and they're all very excited. I expect to see some new folks in the chat room tomorrow night. So those of you that are in our chat room, and if you haven't been there, you should go. Please make them welcome. It should be great fun. So before we get into the meaty stuff, and we're going to talk about emissions cuts and some other things, a new electric car, and a scare campaign today. We've got a bunch to take care of. So, but first, off of the debut Days of the New album, here is Face of the Earth. Roll it, Bob.
Face of the earth.
Well, there you go. Some early days of the new. And ELO made the comment that's, you know, slightly Metallica feeling. And there's probably bloody good reason for that because, you know, huge fans of Metallica they were, or Travis is. And during the time of that record, they actually got to open up for their heroes on the Metallica tour of the time. This was early 90s. So anyway, much more to happen when it comes to Travis tomorrow. But we have important business to take care of today. Now, pardon me. Let's see, where are we going to start? Well, the Kyoto Protocol was ratified in Australia 2 days ago. And so now Australia is accountable to reduction from here on out. And, you know, so, you know, it's serious, you know, nose to the grindstone when it comes to making real cuts and plans. And there was an interview last night with one of the gentlemen from the IPCC on Late Line, but from scopical.com.au, this was sent to me by Gene. The IPCC is telling Australia to cut emissions in the short term. In other words, before 2012, you got to start cutting now. And it says here, Australia has been told to cut its carbon dioxide emissions by at least 25% by the year 2020 if it is to be taken seriously in defeating climate change by other Kyoto members. See, this is the pressure that the United States does not want on them, hence why they don't get with the program. The Kyoto Protocol was officially ratified in Australia this week, with documentation being approved by the United Nations for Australia to become a signatory to the pact. However, despite its signing, the nation has been told to cut its emissions by at least 25% by the year 2020 in order to avoid wide-scale climate change damage. A member of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, Bill Hare, is currently in Australia and has warned the government it must set short-term targets. A report commissioned by the Australian Labor Party last year is due to be delivered later in 2008, with its author, Professor Ross Garnaut, last month saying Australia would need to cut emissions by as much as 90% by the year 2050. Mr. Hare today said that despite the long-term ambition, Australia clearly needed short-term targets if it was to assist in reducing the effects of climate change. "I think the level of ambition is in the right range," he is reported as saying. "What's missing, and I think what will come in the final report, are reduction targets for 2020. The Rudd government has, however, committed Australia to utilizing 20% renewable energy sources by the year 2020. So this is all really good news, but it's this pressure that is necessary if we're going to have a global action and have a global solution. You know, and this is exactly why the United States will not, or so far has not, signed on. And it's only going to be to the demise of the United States, or the damage. There's all this money waiting to be made in the new carbon-free economy. So I do not understand what the holdback is, aside from vested interests. I mean, there's nothing else that you can name as a reason, aside from vested interests. Now, another really cool thing that Gene sent me. See, the technology is just kind of happening everywhere, right? From one of my favorite websites, ecogeek.org. I love this. I love this blog and this site. Get this. I think this is great. This is the kind of stuff that I love hearing about. Simple solutions. Utilizing, I mean, this is innovation. Finding something that already exists and finding a new use for it. And there's an article here. Solar-powered paint could produce 4,500 gigawatts a year. Swansea University has been working with steel companies for years. These companies produce those marvelously beautiful sheets of steel that cover buildings all over the world. But while working on ways to make the steel not degrade in sunlight, a Swansea student figured out how to make the paint actually harness that energy and convert it into electricity. The university has announced that with the 100 million square feet of steel that they produce, they could have 4,500 gigawatts to the grid annually. To that, I say, whoops, you seem to have made a typo, but I'm pretty sure they mean 4,500 gigawatt hours. But that is still an enormous number. 4,500 gigawatts is about a third of the generation capacity of the entire world. So I think it's safe to assume that every single publication, and there are lots, running the story has overlooked a pretty glaring typo. The steel would be painted with solar cells in the factory, hopefully at a rate no slower than current paints are applied. The research has spawned a $3 million grant and has been expanded to include several universities, including Bangor University, University of Bath, and the Imperial College of London. The technology remains lab-bound for now, but the scientists working on the project hope to have 5% efficient solar steel paint in the relatively near future. But two questions remain. Will it be worth redesigning the electricity grid to accept a pay for power from such small providers? And will the added cost to the solar panels and a DC to AC inverter prohibit the technology? There's links to the press clippings of all this. Check out EcoGeek. You'll be able to find it. These are great concepts. You know, this goes along with what I've spoken about before, that as we move into a less carbon-intensive economy, that we need to think about microgeneration. Microgeneration is crucial. And this the concept of central remote generation to the grid could be thought of as being a bit outdated, unless you consider things like solar geothermal, which I've spoken about at length. And I'm going to keep talking about it until I start hearing some American politicians pick it up. I'm going to hound about that technology because it really is the most viable baseload system, biomass being the other. We got enough crap everywhere to pull biomass from, and biomass is one of those win-win things. I keep explaining to people, you know, when I was just having a conversation with one of the contractors here, and you know, biomass, it's a win-win because not only are you finding a new energy source by burning the methane off of landfills and water treatment plants, but you're also burning the methane. And methane per individual part is far more damaging to the environment than carbon is. But we always talk about carbon because it makes up the largest percentage of the family of greenhouse gases. But methane's a huge problem. So these are, again, these are the things that we have to be looking at. Now, I'm going to get this thing here up. Just give me a moment. Bob made mention of this. When I talked about the $300 million fund that is going to inject pro-environmental action advertising into the U.S. campaign, Bob was talking about that the Competitive Enterprise Institute and others will be spending probably 10 times that. And here you go. Never doubt old Master Bob, because right here from today's, if you subscribe to the progress report from Think Progress, you will have gotten this. False alarmism of climate change deniers. Yesterday, the right-wing think tank Competitive Enterprise Institute unveiled an advertising campaign intended to provoke fear about solutions to global warming. The ads also make specious claims about former President, Vice President Al Gore's own energy use. Oh, we're going to rehash that one, are we? In CEI's words, the ads contrast Gore's energy-consuming lifestyle with the life-and-death need for energy in developing countries. The $30,000 campaign set to run in 2 weeks on CNN, NBC, and Fox News include a 60-second television spot and a longer web video. Despite decrying the alarmism of those who advocate fighting global warming, CEI is happy to use false alarmism in its own tactics, or in its own attacks. At the press conference, CEI's general counsel, Sam Kasman, said that climate change legislation of the kind Gore supports would herald death on a massive scale, an absolute disaster, suffering and starvation on a massive scale in the developing world. Today's progress report sets the record straight. They continue on saying, clueless alarmism. CEI claims that combating climate change means restricting access to affordable energy, a sure recipe for increasing poverty, disease, and human misery around the world. CEI's alarmist claims not only ignore the very real threat posed by climate change to the developing world, which would face food shortages and devastating drought. Moreover, the Kyoto Protocol adopted in 1997 and now ratified by 174 nations, including the European Union, China, and India, recognizes the different economics of developing and industrialized nations. Industrialized states, which have achieved prosperity over 150 years of development without having to account for global warming pollution, are expected to meet stricter emission standards, while developing nations are expected to engage in a more gradual transition to low-carbon economies. These guidelines have been embraced by the leaders of practically every nation on Earth. Even major Fortune 500 companies have endorsed significant reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. At the Bali conference this past December, leaders of developing nations shamed American, Canadian, and Japanese delegations into action. I want to know what action they're talking about when it comes to the United States, because I still haven't really seen any. Attacking the messenger, CEI's TV ad begins, "Here's the electricity we use at home. Al Gore uses 20 times as much." This claim is based on a 2006 figure constructed by then 24-year-old Jason Drew Johnson, who stated the Tennessee Center for Policy Research in 2005. Gore's private residence, which includes his home office, is indeed considerably larger and more energy-intensive than the average Tennessee home. However, since Gore purchased the home in 2002, he's transformed it into a model of best practices through extensive renovations that include a geothermal pump, rainwater collection system, solar panels, and LED bulbs, despite the incandescent bulbs used by the ad to portray his purported energy use. He now has one of the first 14 homes in the United States to receive the LEED Gold certification for efficiency and green practices. The still ongoing renovations have cut the home's summer electrical consumption by 11% compared with a year ago. The television spot also refers to Gore as the chief spokesman for the global warming alarmism. While Gore has certainly become a public face of climate change activism in the United States, he is by no means alone. His 2007 Nobel Peace Prize was shared equally with members of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for their efforts to build up and disseminate greater knowledge about man-made climate change and to lay the foundations for the measures that are needed to counteract such change. The IPCC reports, which specifically recommend energy infrastructure investments in developing countries to achieve GHG emissions reductions, are consensus documents authored by thousands of scientists and approved by government representatives from around the world, including the Bush administration. Do you think the right wing really just absolutely fears Al Gore? I do. And these rumors that we hear about the Democratic National Convention, that if it goes to a second ballot, that the Democrats could actually turn around and nominate Al Gore for the candidacy. I have to say, I find it curious, interesting, and if it did happen, I would be one happy-ass camper, especially if he accepted. The chances of that happening and the chances of accepting, I view as slim. But I could be completely wrong on this. I could be completely off my rocker. Stranger things have happened. I mean, you know, Al Gore did win the election and he ended up not being president. So, yes, stranger things have happened. But they continue on here. The cost of free market. Since its founding in 1984 by Fred Smith Jr., CEI has championed its own version of the free market. the right of various industries to endanger the environment and health and safety of the American people. Funded by Philip Morris. Hey, tobacco science! Ha ha ha. CEI opposed tobacco regulations as being harmful to individual choice, freedom of speech, and most ironically of all, public health itself. Hello, opposite world. And that was a statement they made in 99. Funded by Ford and General Motors, CEI filed suit against fuel company fuel economy cafe standards. Funding by Pfizer, CEI used AIDS to argue that the FDA's role in reviewing new drugs should be solely advisory. Funded by the Chlorine Chemical Council, CEI expert Michelle Malkin conflated dioxin with chlorinated water. Michelle Malkin, an expert? I mean, I pay very little attention to that absolute piece of shit. But she is. Everything I've ever seen. She's a reactionary piece of shit who likes things like rendition and agrees with when America used to, you know, treat Asians as second-class citizens. Talk about sleeping with the devil. But they continue on. Heads in the Sand Coalition. CEI, TCPR, and the National Center for Public Policy Research, the Climate Denier Conference, Heartland Institute, and two other names on Drew Johnson's resume, the National Taxpayers Union and the American Enterprise Institute are all members of the State Policy Network, a voluntary and by invitation only coalition of free market think tanks. CEI presently sits atop the Cooler Heads Coalition, a global warming skeptic propaganda machine, which also includes NCPPR, Heartland, NTUF, and AEI. Those five organizations alone have directly received over $5 million from ExxonMobil since 1998. Outside the confines of CEI and its network, as the Wall Street Journal recognizes, the national debate, however, is trending more towards Gore's view of the impact of global warming. And this is because the science is there. It's all just science. And it's incredible that we can continue to, you know, there's free speech and all. But, I mean, there has to be some accountability for outright propaganda. Or is it just me? This kind of stuff just absolutely freaks me out when I read it. Because I feel, you know, there's so many wonderful people out there who have worked so hard to get this, you know, out into the mainstream, to get this situation to the forefront. And yet, we're still fighting this crap. And it is crap. And again, I still have this, you know, vibe that I like to take with deniers. Say, okay, even if the science isn't exactly accurate, what is your problem with cleaning up our act so we stop poisoning our children? But it seems as though for these people, profits and destruction are more important than their own children. I reckon that falls into the category of being a sociopath. It's my opinion. I think I'm not the only one with that opinion. Now, I'm getting another link here. I love technology. I love news on new technology, and I do believe that this came from Texas Betsy as I wait for it to come up. I got a new electric car. Retail price $26,000 in the United States. And I'm still waiting for the page to load. And it failed. Let's try it again. But we're talking 300 mile equivalent to 300 miles per gallon on this vehicle. If I can ever get the bloody page to load. It's called an Aptera, and they're actually a motorcycle company. And this could be very interesting. Bloody hell. What is with the net the last couple of days? At least over here. It's been very, very shaky and dodgy. But anyway. Oh, it just wants to play Silly Buggers. Come on. Thanks for the link in the chat, ELO. I wish I could open it up. Oh, my. Anyway, it's a three-wheeled vehicle. It's heavier than the air car. Bugger. What a bugger. It will not open for me. I don't understand why, but anyway. The technology is there. For under 30 grand, you'll soon be able to buy an electric car with 120-mile range or a plug-in hybrid that gets 300 miles per gallon. And this, I've been saying this for a while. The hybrid thing is a nice step, but they need to be plug-in hybrids. So you can pre-charge the battery and run off of that first. And when you need to, go to the petrol. Not kind of the other way around, where you drive on petrol till the batteries are charged up, then it runs on electricity. So, you know, all right, what was... This has completely thrown me because I really wanted to read this. Oh, well. Bugger it. It's a cool thing. The web address is aptera.com. And it's a very futuristic-looking car, but it's not a prototype. It is not a prototype. This is a from what I was able to scan through a production unit. And you know, anyone who studied physics and geometry, the triangle is the most strong geometric form. A three-wheel vehicle, and it's two wheels in the front, one in the back, will be highly stable on the road. Highly stable. It's really, really just... This is interesting stuff. And it's new ideas. I mean, we should seriously be supporting this stuff. Now I am also going to go. Let's try and go a different direction. Uno momento, folks. Uno momento, por favor. As I go and find another link. This is just madness. Here we go. This might be a repeat of the other thing that I said. The Age is reporting also this thing. Bill Hare, more from Bill Hare, says here, and this is from The Age, a leading authority on climate change says Australia's greenhouse gas reduction targets are inadequate and an all-industrialized country should be aiming to become carbon neutral. Now, see, this goes along with what Bob was saying, the fact that, you know, it's a little bit more dire than we originally knew or originally believed. And we have less time than we thought we had. So, as Bill Hare says here, a leading author on the latest report, says industrialized countries need to cut emissions by 85 to 95% of 1990 levels by 2050, a far more substantial reduction from the 60% proposed by our current federal government. And the cuts should not stop there. I think all industrialized countries will need to be aiming to be carbon neutral by the middle of the century, he added. Dr. Hare, an Australian scientist working in Germany, met the government's leading climate change advisor, Professor Ross Garnaut, yesterday, and meets Environment Minister Minister Peter Garrett today. So, you know, this is what we get for waiting so bloody long. And thank you, ELO, for the alternate link on the car. I got that, and that one does work. Thank you. It's, you know, we've been going, no, not yet, no, not yet, no, not yet, no, not yet, as emissions keep rising and rising and rising and rising. So just like everything else, all the modeling has always been too simple, too conservative. And every time we get a new model that comes out, it's going, oh, you know, we're in worse shape than we thought. So, yeah, of course, now it's going to sound like a panic campaign. Because we should have been listening to Jimmy Carter back in the 70s. But no, we had to destroy him and malign him. Okay, here we go. I have something here on the Aptera. This is actually from Tree Hugger, another one of the great environmental blogs out there on the net. Ever since we first saw the Aptera, we've been waiting for this. Today, the company officially pulled the curtain back on the Type 1, TYP-1, the funky three-wheeler with jaw-dropping efficiency stats. After some speculation about diesel engines and parallel hybrid models about how the prototype would hold up in a crash, here's the real deal. Aptera will be available in two models, all electric and a series hybrid. The electric version is slated for delivery in 2008, and with the hybrid model to follow. For more on the difference between the series and parallel hybrids, check out, they've got a link. The all-electric model has a range of 120 miles. The plug-in series hybrid has achieved more than 300 miles per gallon with a range of more than 600 miles. Both will be available for less than $30,000. Though exact pricing hasn't been announced, it's what a sizable chunk of change will get you. You'll get some pretty slick features, including solar cells embedded under the roof, operate an always-on climate control system, ensuring the interior never gets too hot or too cold, and a computer-controlled eyes-forward vision system. By replacing the side mirrors with embedded cameras that display a 180-degree rear view of the front at the front of the instrument panel. Eyes forward gives the driver complete situational awareness without taking their eyes off the road. Fully refundable reservation deposits of $500 are now being accepted from California residents on the Aptera website. The company will initially deliver vehicles in Southern California, then Northern California, and to other regions nationwide. Cross your fingers that we'll actually see these on the road before buying a 2009 calendar. It's a brilliant-looking vehicle.
Thanks, man.
As the last of the contractors says goodbye for the day. my house is my own again. But check out Tree Hugger. Check out the Aptera website. It's an amazing-looking vehicle. I mean, talk about, you know, here's George Jetson. And there's a video of a test drive, and some very impressive stuff. So, for the price of your gas-guzzling SUV, you can have something that's really, really, really clean, really groovy-looking, and it has safety in mind. And what I never thought about is because these folks are already a motorcycle manufacturer, they already have the ability to issue VIN numbers, vehicle identification numbers, which I guess is a license that might be tricky to get in the United States. So maybe these folks have a leg up on a couple of the other outfits that they already have this legal loophole dealt with. I don't know, but it seemed to be something very important to them when I was at their website. So, you know, I love hearing about new technology. It's just fantastic. So, let's see. Where are we going now? I'm just kidding. At this point, I'm Bob's telling me that VIN numbers are an incredibly Byzantine process. It is a leg up. Something I had never thought about before. I know that, you know, with the air cars, there's crash test issues and some other things that they have to get through. Well, maybe these folks have a definite leg up, that they're already part of the system. So it's very, very interesting. Right, Bob says they even have to be stamped in places that the general public couldn't find with a map. yeah, it is supposed to be for identifying parts when they're, you know, when a car gets stolen and parted out. Now, going through some more of the stuff that the wondrous Gene, our news ninja, has sent me. And I haven't read this yet, so we'll go through this together. I love tips. And it says, this is from Gmundo, GIMUNDO.com. And it's 6 cheapskate ways to help the Earth. What better? Do something good, help the Earth. And they say, sure, you've seen An Inconvenient Truth and cringed at the image of the CGI polar bear swimming in the ocean for miles with no ice in sight. Since you don't want any polar bear blood on your hands, you've resolved to go greener by eating organic, switching over to CFL light bulbs, supporting only eco-conscious businesses, and doing whatever else Al Gore asks you. The only problem, environmentalism can be very expensive. You can spend your entire weekly grocery budget on a few packages of organic meat at Whole Foods. And that eco-friendly bamboo T-shirt you ordered last week didn't come cheap either. While you'd love to save the planet, you'd also like to keep your kitchen pantry stocked with something more than ramen noodles. Luckily, you don't need to choose between paying your mortgage and stopping global warming. There are plenty of ways you can go green without spending a single dollar. Here are some of the favorite ways to help the Earth when you're on a budget. Recycle. Obvious. Simple, free, easy. Plus, in some states, you'll even get money back for recycling cans and bottles. And what's more budget-friendly than that? Don't buy new stuff. I'm a big fan of this. I am a big post-consumer recycler, shall we say. I love recycling things that people throw out and getting further use from them. Our coffee table is a great example. I look around my studio and... Oh, there's a few things. One of the keyboards that I have here was something that someone, I mean, as in musical synthesizer keyboard, was something that someone was throwing out, and it serves me fine as a MIDI controller. The amplifier that I've modified to run my guitars is actually from someone's trash. So I'm a big fan of this kind of stuff. Whether you're looking for furniture, books, appliances, or clothing, except underwear, we draw the line there. Avoid paying top dollar at retail shops by buying secondhand goods or using free trading services like FreeCycle. And if you've never checked out FreeCycle, go to FreeCycle.org. It's a great place. You can get what you need for cheap or free without supporting industries that draw on the Earth's precious resources. And one of my favorite things about FreeCycle, it's a place where... folks who have things that they can't use anymore, instead of throwing them out, they list them saying, I have this. If you want to come and get it, you can have it. And you see all kinds of things, bicycles, computers. You need a monitor. With everybody going out and buying new LCDs, you can get some pretty fine, large CRTs for nothing. They continue on. Do it yourself. Rather than buying expensive green cleaning products, make your own with household supplies. You probably already got everything you need to create all-natural, eco-friendly household cleaners. To make a scrubbing solution that's perfect for cleaning bathtubs, simply combine half a cup of baking soda and enough liquid detergent to make a spreadable solution. For an earth-friendly window cleaning sprayer or an oven cleaner, a furniture polish, and more, check out, there's a link to a Care 2 site with a bunch of things. Like I said, you can find this at GIMUNDO.com. I'll try and maybe see if I can get some of these links put up after the show. Green your commute. Can't afford to buy a pricey hybrid? No problem. There are plenty of other ways to reduce your carbon footprint. If you live near the office, try biking there instead of driving whenever the weather's nice enough. Also a great way to work out for free. If not, buy a monthly bus pass or try carpooling with a neighbor. The most eco-friendly commute of all, of course, is telecommuting. Your boss may not let you work in your PJs every day, but if you can score a single day each work to work from home, you could drastically reduce your carbon emissions each year. So if your boss still isn't buying it, tell him the earth depends on it, and he just might cave. And there's a link on ways to win over your boss on the idea of a telecommute. Grow your own food. Another thing I'm a big fan of. Gail and I have been doing this now for a year as much as we can, and we're learning. And it's such a gratifying process to grow your own food. It really is. We had pasta last night, and our Roma tomatoes, however late that they've come up, they're starting to come up in bushels. And I just grabbed all these, you know, absolutely beautiful, straight off of the vine Roma bush tomatoes, and just cut them up, threw them in the pan, and just absolutely genius. And you know, there's nothing, and these have got to be the fleshiest tomatoes I've ever seen in my life. You dice it up, and there's hardly a seed on the cutting board. It's all flesh. It's just amazing. And it truly is one of the most gratifying things you will ever do. I'm so thankful that Gail, you know, got us to do this. It's just been beyond enjoyable. They continue on. Flip the switch. One of the easiest ways to conserve power, but sometimes it can be tough to remember, to turn off lights and electronic equipment when they're not in use. Whenever you leave a room, make a point of turning off the lights, TV, computer, and other appliances or electronics, if you know you won't be back within the next few minutes. And as each light bulb burns out, make the switch to energy-saving CFL bulbs to stay green even while you're using power. CFLs cost a bit more than regular bulbs, blah, blah, blah. We know this. And I've told you that at the same time that we started paying extra for 100% renewable energy for our house and the studio here, we also converted everything in the house over to compact fluorescents. And we have seen virtually no change in a power bill. So with the extra $100 per quarter we're paying for this power, our drop in consumption has counteracted it. And, I mean, we have the benefit of the fact that we got rid of the electric washing machine, and we have our wonderful hand-crank washing machine, which I still think is one of the greatest things we've ever found. And, you know, these are all really easy, you know. And they will save you money. You will see it. You will actually see the difference just by changing over to CFLs. And you'll hear some people saying, oh, what about the mercury and the CFLs? I make this point for the umpteenth time. The amount of mercury inside one compact fluorescent is negligible compared to the amount of mercury that is produced when burning coal to run that bulb. And it is even a smaller fraction compared to a regular incandescent bulb. Thank you for the link in the chat room there, Gene. It's a great little list. And I mean, we've seen these lists before, and they require constant reminding, because, you know, this is all about changing attitudes and changing habits. I mean, it really is about changing our habits. And once you change the habit, it no longer feels like a huge deal. And it's actually not. And you can feel better about it. And I think one of the things that the United States needs is power switches on your PowerPoints. We have them here. It's a great thing. So all those little appliances and stuff in the kitchen, when you're not using them, you just click them off the switch. You don't have to unplug them. Just click them off the switch. If you don't have a way to turn the TV off of standby power, you just click it off at the switch. You know, it falls into that same category. Why we don't see things like this in American homes, just like the dual flush toilets that we've had here in Australia for decades. Bob says, but my coffee maker will blink at noon all the time. This is something that actually manufacturers need to deal with. VCRs, DVD players, things like that should actually have a small rechargeable battery in them that runs the clock when the power's off. Because just by kicking off the power on all your standby electronics, you can save 10% of your power bill on average a year. You know? That's a lot. Just by making sure that the television's actually off. I mean, how simple is that? How much waste in money, power generation, and excess carbon and other things are pumped out just because we have all this stuff on standby power? You know, ever since I got my laptop, I hardly use my towers anymore. And the difference is, you know, this thing might use 70 watts when the tower would be using 400 on its main power supply, and the CRT monitor, God only knows. It ain't hot. So, I mean, and earlier today, I'm not sure if it wasn't Juanita, but someone on Bob's show was talking about once you make the change to buying organic food and changing the way that you buy food, the impact comes down, but it's about changing habits. The convenience, the so-called manufactured convenience, just does not hold up. And you see benefits, but it's changing habits, getting used to new things. It's just absolutely, they're simple steps, really. But there are many of them, and it's about changing behavior. The way we run our lives. And it is possible. I mean, the day will come. I still want to have, you know, a home that Gail and I build with our own two hands, generating its own power. That's what I want. I think it would be just awesome. But, you know, we've still got a long slog ahead. And, you know, we need to change. One of the things that needs to change in the United States is the fact that this is not a crucial issue. At least it's not being represented. We need to make it a crucial issue. Because, really, when it comes down to it, no planet to support life, we're all screwed. And this is why Fortune 500 companies are going, hey, you know what? This idea of cutting emissions is probably really, really good. This idea of getting off the oil standard is probably pretty damn good. We support it. We think it'll be good for business. And it will be good for business. Old, antiquated businesses may go by the wayside. Too bad. That's actually what a free market's more about, isn't it? Talking to those free market nutters. In a truly free market, if someone else is producing better than you, you shouldn't be protected. And I think that environmental and social responsibility needs to almost be translated into a dollar value. I think if you are able to produce power at something even near competitive, but yet you're not doing the damage that the coal companies are doing, you should get a leg up. because without doing the by not doing the damage, you're not costing society. You know, these are, if you remember the film Corporation, these are the things that fall into externalities. It's someone else's problem. Don't hold up my profits with what I think is someone else's problem. It's everyone's problem. And like I said yesterday and over the last couple of days, probably the reason why it's become so much more of an issue in mainstream Australia is because the drought has made global warming an obvious issue to most Australians. You know, in fact, this contractor, Chris, when I was speaking to him earlier, he said, yeah, he said, everyone in this country understands. They got it. We saw it. We've watched our farmer struggle. We have watched this great brown land burn year after year after year after year. We have watched the rains stop. And yeah, this year is different, at least in this part of the country. But you're going to have these fluctuations, and it doesn't mean that the problem's not still there. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. A lot of work ahead of us. So anyway, folks, we're starting to come up on the end of things, and I beg of you, please be around tomorrow. It's going to be a really interesting show. I can't wait to have this conversation with Travis on the air. It's going to be great fun. We're going to talk music. We're going to talk philosophy, spirituality, the state of the world, the state of the mind, addiction recovery, and future albums, and exactly what the deal is with the colors in the trees when it comes to Mr. Meeks. And I think you'll enjoy a lot of this. Interesting cat, and I've been getting some responses from people on his MySpace pages saying that they can't wait. And so, like I said, I hope to see a bunch of new people in the chat room tomorrow night during the show. So all of our regulars, please, please make them all very, very welcome. Could be some new listeners for the horn, and I hope that's the case. So thanks to Bob for producing. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions for the music. Thank you to Coal River Mountain Watch for their support of the network and CityNet as well. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I stuck my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. You've heard the story before. There's a Democratic governor and Republicans trying to take him down. The Democrat is going where few Democrats have gone before, has been governor where few Democrats have been governor in recent times, and would control a Democratic state legislature. No, of course, I'm not talking about Governor Spitzer of New York. I'm talking about Governor Don Siegelman of Alabama.